This evening, in his first major television interview since his dismissal, Roy Keane speaks about the events which led to his departure from Ireland's World Cup squad, how the controversy has affected him, and whether there's any possibility of him playing for Ireland in Japan. He spoke this afternoon to Tommy Gorman.
Well, it remains to this day one of the most watched sports interviews, or perhaps any interview in Ireland, and it took place 20 years ago this week. Roy Keane, interviewed by Tommy Gorman, broadcast on the 27th of May 2002 on the 6-1 News, to a spellbound country shocked at the departure of Irish captain Keane from the Irish squad as they prepared for the World Cup finals. He'd left the Irish preparations in Saipan. He'd been persuaded to come back and then was promptly dismissed from the setup after a showdown with manager Mick McCarthy, after the contents of an interview he'd given to the Irish Times, amongst others. So while Roy Keane was back in Manchester, it was Tommy who was chosen for the exclusive interview. Would he come back? Could he come back? What was likely to happen? Why did he do it? The interview was recorded at the Moat House Hotel in Manchester, and it ran for 35 minutes on the 6-1 News on that day, as I say, 20 years ago this week. Tommy Gorman, good morning to you.
And thanks
for joining us this morning. And I'm tempted to say how quickly the years go. It's, as we well know, it is very hard sometimes to be impartial and detached when you're doing interviews, particularly one as high profile as this. Was that in your mind? Where were you when you got the call to be the one to go and interview Roy Keane?
I was back in Belfast. I'd worked in Brussels for 12 years, and some of my duties, some of my pleasures during that time involved covering sports fixtures, including Manchester United's run to the Champions League final, in which Keane was so prominent. Covered some of the international games as well. I covered the Ireland-Netherlands match, the 2-2 draw in Amsterdam, where Ireland went 2 up and then were pegged back. And I suppose I got to see at a number of those ventures, the kind of standards Keane had with Manchester United. And I suppose some of the behind-the-scenes activity in, say, the Irish setup as well. So I was in Belfast on the time of the row in Saipan, and Ed Mulhall, the head of news, knew I had an interest in soccer and in sport in general. Brian O'Connell was on holidays from our London office, and Ed asked me would I go across and try and get an interview with Keane.
What sort of approach did you take, Tommy? Of course, you had to obviously challenge him and ask him the hard questions, but at the same time, as a sports fan, as a soccer fan, you were trying to get to the number of the issue, and I'm sure you had a degree of sympathy for Roy Keane as well. So how, in your mind, how are you going to approach the interview?
Well, what you try and do is you ask yourself, what are people interested in? What is the news value of this? And most people wanted to know if there was any chance of Keane going back, how deep the wounds were. And he knew that one of the reasons we were keen to talk to him was that we would offer him the platform through RTE, the National Broadcasting Service, to give his side of the story and question him about that. And that was one of the reasons why he agreed to be interviewed by me, because he had done a piece for the Mail on Sunday, a British newspaper. He was the captain of Ireland. He had a really decent man as his agent, a man I became friendly with in the years afterwards, a man called Michael Kennedy. Michael's roots were in both Kerry and Cork. And Michael immediately got the idea that it was important for the Irish public to understand where Keane was coming from. So I think that was the basis on which I got the interview. It was because I brought the RTE brand and the opportunity to talk to the Irish people. The interview went out after 8 o'clock. There was a small snatch of it on the 6-1, but we were still editing the interview right up to the time it was going on air, just putting it together and tidying it up. So it actually went out as it was coming in from Manchester. It was as immediate as that, Niall.
Yeah, no pressure. So, and I mean, what can you remember? And you know, I think what people forget is when you interviewed Roy Keane, it was still very much in the mix. There was still a sense that maybe this could be rescued, that he might return to the World Cup. So what was his demeanour like at the interview? Was he angry? Was he regretful? Was he under pressure? What was your sense of where he was at that stage?
Keane is very sensitive. He has a short fuse. He's a gladiator. He's hurt. He's a fighter at heart. Like, Keane he was a box office player. He was a fantastic player. And obviously, there were times on the pitch where he, you know, lost his temper. And that was part of Keane's personality, where he had edge. So obviously, when you're in that situation where you're still in the heat of battle, there was still anger in him, there was hurt in him. But there was also the knowledge that this was probably his last chance to progress in a major tournament with Ireland. Like, Keane played in the World Cup in 1994, and this was 2002. He had come back from injury. He had actually missed the Champions League final in 1999 from suspension. He recognised that there were some very good young players in the Irish team, and that this chance was unlikely to come again. He had issues for a long time with the FAI setup, with some of the personalities. He didn't have a great relationship with Mick McCarthy. So all those factors were in his mind. But I genuinely believe, and I have good grounds to believe it, that part of Keane wanted to go back.
Yeah.
Another part of him says, no, that would involve bending the knee. And I think you got some of those contradictions and some of those arguments that were raging in his own head. I think he got a sense of some of them. Watched him at the weekend working with Sky in the Manchester City stadium,
yeah.
Etihad, and you could see that he's in a comfort zone again. He has brought the edge that he had on the pitch, he has brought it to his punditry, and I was delighted to see him happy, and I also saw the respect that Guardiola had for him, you know, after
his manager
of the team.
Yeah.
That you could see him coming over, and, you know, even before he left, he went over and he had his private word with Keane. I'm glad, too, that he was reconciled in a way with Mick McCarthy. He actually went to work with the FAI, with Martin O'Neill. I'm glad it was a reconciliation of sorts there. Don't actually think he'll ever be a successful manager, Niall, because the kind of skills he had as a player, you can't pass those on to other players in a managerial role. And I think he's probably in the best place for him at the moment. Like, Sky, I'm sure, are so delighted to have him. He's their top pundit and he's really good on television and people like him and admire him and they watch him because you don't know what's going to come next.
Yeah, there was some talk of him going to Hibernian a few weeks ago, but that never came to anything at all. You've said previously, Tommy, that you felt in some respects the interview was a missed opportunity in that, as we now know, there was a lot more going on with Keane and, you know, coming to his end, the end of his career and so forth, than just simply a row between two stubborn men.
Yeah, like, I saw at many different stages in my work and life that when there's a row going on and when angry words are said and when tempers are raised, just it's kind of hard to halt things and to just pause for breath and for people to think, look, is there a way out of this? But for me, one of the central problems behind the whole Saipan thing was that the FAI simply didn't have the structures in place to cope with the complexity of some of the individuals, some of the different standards they had. Like, Keane was working with Manchester United, where Ferguson had them, you know, humming. But that took absolute concentration on excellence. And the FAI simply didn't have the structures in place for that. And the sad thing about it for me is, say, you look at the key personalities, you look at, like, say, Mick McCarthy, Roy Keane, you look at, say, fellas who got caught up in the mix, like Niall Quinn, there was no villain there. They all had the best of intentions. They all had their perspectives. And the tragedy of it was, that was the best Irish team we had gathered in years, because you had the likes of Keane, but you had the Damien Duff and Robbie Keane and other guys like that coming through too. And we would have been a better team if we had Keane as captain.
Absolutely, he was the one that got away. We could have won the World Cup back in 2002, no doubt about it. Have you ever met Roy Keane since that face-to-face time?
I have, yeah. When he was involved with the guide dogs, he used to work with that charity. He came across to Ireland and I interviewed him at that stage. I met him when he was working with Martin O'Neill. The time that Martin O'Neill came down to open the Sean Fallon Centre at the Showgrounds,
yeah.
I was with him in the Irish training camp in Malahide before that, and I met Roy Keane then. I had lots of contact with Michael Kennedy, his agent. Michael gave me the story when Roy came back, and then, you know, it didn't work out brilliantly. He was with Brian Kerr, and then he decided that he was going to, you know, stop the international stuff and concentrate on his club career because he was running out of time with Manchester United, and he was getting old, and, you know, his body wasn't as strong. And they gave me the story when he announced that he was ending his international involvement. I had other dealings with them as well. Tell you a true story. One Friday, Martin McGuinness asked me, was there any chance I could do something for a young man from Derry who was going over to a Manchester United match. The young lad was very ill at the time, and United were playing the next day against Southampton. The parents of the young lad were hoping that he might get to meet Roy Keane. Now, it was the day before a match, and I got on to Michael Kennedy. The young lad went over to the match. United beat Southampton. I think Gordon Strachan was managing Southampton at the time. And Keane and Ruud van Nistelrooy came out immediately after the game, found the young lad, brought him into the players' lounge, and Keane presented him with the jersey that he wore during that game. Martin McGuinness told me a few months later that he went to a wakehouse in Derry. The young lad died, and in the coffin he was wearing the jersey that Roy Keane had presented to him. So that's the side of Keane you wouldn't hear about too often, but
absolutely,
he had that decent side too.
Absolutely. 20 years ago this week, Tommy, we can't let you go without mentioning your beloved Sligo Rovers and managerial upheaval again, Liam Buckley's departure at the weekend. How did you react to that? What are your thoughts on it?
I think Liam Buckley and his wife, Orla, because they were a team, they were two of the finest people that we've had at the Showgrounds. As a manager, Liam had impeccable standards. You know, that story about his history as a player, when he signed for us towards the end of his career and he was injured, because he wasn't getting his place through injury towards the end of the season. There wouldn't be many people who do this. He actually gave back some of his wages to the club. So that's the kind of person he is. And he brought those standards to the Rovers as a manager. I thought it was ironic and sad that last night we played the kind of football that Liam always encouraged. It was really clever, committed, not say aggressive in a dirty kind of a way, but really on the front foot, going for it. And that a young lad, came back to the club, signed with him, that he scores the winner. And I just thought it was terribly sad that the players didn't produce that kind of football for a really, really bad run. And that it took Liam's departure to bring that out in them again. I feel extremely sad for Liam. I feel sad for, say, the people in the management of the club, that they have to look at the resources, the budgets that they've given. And you look at what's going on in the league now. A number of the clubs, we go through them, like Shelburne, like Pats, like Shamrock Rovers, like Derry, like Dundalk. They have owners with money, or they have a person who's willing to get them 200 or 250,000 a year. We don't have that in the Showgrounds. And the only way we can compete with them is have a successful team that's getting into Europe and develop the Showgrounds where we have an off-field income from the Showgrounds site. That's our only hope of keeping, say, the Rovers in the place people want them to be. And I think that's what happened in recent days, that just the results, we were on the slide, we were in the bottom half of the table for the first time, and Liam was really, really trying to get the best out of the players, but it wasn't coming on the field. But I think last night, in many respects, was a tribute to him because it was his kind of football. And I think it was the players putting their hands up and saying, these are his values and we're going to try to stick with those values. And he'll always be a special person in the showgrounds because of what he did, because of the way he brought us back. And I was very, very sad for everybody involved, including the officers of the club, who are all volunteers, who had to make what they felt was the decision that was necessary to try and keep the club successful.